For Politico, I'm Ryan Heath, and this is Global Insider. Welcome to the first of a special series coming to you from New York City. The drama that overshadows everything at this gathering of the UN General Assembly is Russia. One of the five permanent members of the UN Security Council is responsible for a serious breach of the international order. People who support Ukraine and democracy and human rights have a major problem with this, but they don't have everybody on board. So that's coloring everything that happens in the debates, in the donor conferences, in the planning for how the UN meets its global goals. And because of what Russia's done, the world's efforts to meet those goals are severely off track, whether we're talking climate, whether we're talking gender equality, whether we're talking food security. All of it has been put at risk because of what Russia has done in Ukraine. I'm standing here outside Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza, which is one of the big UN buildings where lots of embassies are based. And I've just interviewed Pedro Sanchez, the Prime Minister of Spain. And he's in a really tight spot. He has come here to promote food security, investments in a green transition. He's extremely proud of his track record on gender equality. And it's very difficult to make that work in this environment that we're seeing here at UNGO, where Russia has overturned what many people thought were the natural way of doing things in a rules-based global order.
One thing that Putin achieved with this invasion is the acceleration of the process of integration of the European Union. First, with the mutualization of the public debt to respond to the pandemic and economic and social consequences. And also with this invasion, what we call strategic autonomy, which is not a new way of protectionism. It is indeed the review of our industrial policy and be much more resilient against this attack of autocrats such as Putin. Yeah.
I always find it strange. It's my personal thing from my time in Brussels. So America has strategic autonomy. Mm. China has developed strategic autonomy. And then there becomes this fear around Europe talking about its own strategic autonomy. But I don't see it as any different to what the US and China have obtained for themselves.
Well, I think Europe has many opportunities that we need to develop in the coming months and years. So for instance, why don't we have strong ties and alliance with the African Union and the African countries or with Latin American countries. This is something that we want also to develop during our European Union presidency, to have again a summit in Brussels between the European Union and the CELAC, which is, you know, the organization for the Latin American countries. So, you know, I think that we need to boost trade. And also to think how can we provide our means in this, what we call this strategic autonomy, but always with an open view and a complementary view to other economies which are allies for the European Union.
And speaking of Latin America, you reminded me there has been some new surveys showing Latin American countries' financial systems being more skeptical of Chinese investment. And so I think of that over here. Then you have the Mercosur trade deal. It's blocked. It's difficult over here. But there's some opportunity in the middle for other investment, non-Chinese investment, not getting caught up in the trade deal. Europe, Spain can come in the middle. And
absolutely. And I think that, the president of the Commission in the last State of the Union debate before the European Parliament announced that this trade agreement with Mexico and Chile were already to be passed. And I think that, of course, Mercosur could provide, at the end of the day, an important role to play of the European Union and Latin American region in the global economy. And, well, we are going to do our best to end this file in our presidency next year.
It strikes me that making those energy markets work is going to be an important part of stopping a rise of populism or of radical right-wing parties in Europe. And it feels to me like a bit of a wave. You know, maybe you could put different labels on these three people, but Liz Truss is now in government in Britain. The Swedish Democrats will probably join the government in Sweden. Giorgia Meloni could be at the summit table with you soon in Italy. So I don't question the legitimacy of them, but as a social democrat, it must be worrying to see that as a trend. What do you think about populism and how we manage it?
I mean, of course, the situation in each country is different because the political system in each country is different. But take into consideration, for instance, the example of Sweden. You have the Social Democrats winning by far, 10 points ahead, 30%. The second political party reached 20%, which was the far right, and then the moderates, so-called moderates, 19%. I think that the first question has to be answered by the right-wing parties. What do they expect from the far right? And how do they design their relations with the far right parties in each country? And I don't think at all it is solved. And I think that the major challenges for social democrats and of course for every government is to provide an inclusive, social inclusive approach to these two major revolutions.
A touchy topic, of course, but the Catalonian representatives yes. have been here talking to us. It feels to me that maybe they need to have some more dialogue at home before they bring a message to the United yes. Nations. But how do you feel about it? Because your policy is dialogue.
I would say that I always explain to my people in Catalonia, you know, that this crisis needs time. That doesn't mean that we don't face the dialogue and to put or to table solutions. And for that, it's also very important that the independent movement in Catalonia speaks clearly to their citizens and to say, well, you know, we need to find alternatives, different solutions to solve this crisis. And this is what I'm trying also to share with the people in Catalonia and the rest of Spain. No, but my commitment, I think, is clear. I think that I show it last year, and I think that the outcome of that difficult decision for some Spaniards is, you know, the stability, the normalization, and the coexistence, which is, I think, very important.
Great. Absolute last question. We can do it as yes. we walk out the door. Yes. I saw my colleagues were urging me to ask you about some instances of racism on the, yes. the football field.
I didn't have the chance because I was in attending the final at the Eurobasket in Berlin.
Congratulations,
in Berlin.
By the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. But is there any message about cooling the temperature and saying no to racism you want to share?
I think it's important that the soccer clubs take seriously this kind of behavior and react. And since
because they're in this position of influence on their fans.
Yes, exactly. And and since I'm a big supporter of Atletico de Madrid, you know, I was very sad. And I expect that, you know, a strong message from the clubs against this kind of behavior. This is what I would ask my, you know, my team. Back
Mr.
in
Prime
Spain.
Minister, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And that's our show. Brooke Hayes produced this episode and is senior editor of audio at Politico. Jenny Arment is executive producer of audio at Politico. And our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. I'm Ryan Heath, and we'll be back with more of the action from behind the scenes at UNGA tomorrow.